This is the sixth day of this April 2018 seven-day session. And we'll look into a koan this morning. This is from the Mumonkan, or also known as the Gateless Barrier. Number 28, Ryutan blows out a candle. It's one of the longer koans in the Mumonkan. We'll just read the case. Toksan called on Ryutan and questioned him far into the night. At last Ryutan said, "It's getting late. You should go now." Toksan made his bows and lifted the blind to leave. Seeing that it was dark, he turned back and said, "It's dark outside." Ryutan thereupon lit a candle and handed it to him. Just as Toksan reached to take it, Ryutan blew it out. At this, Toksan was suddenly enlightened. He then made bows. "What have you realized?" asked Ryutan. Toksan replied, "I'll never again doubt the words of the old monk who is renowned throughout the world." The next day, Ryutan entered the hall and declared to the assembly, "Among you there is a fellow whose teeth are like swords and whose mouth is like a bowl of blood. Strike him with a stick and he won't turn his head. One day he will climb to the highest of all peaks and establish our way there." Toksan then placed his notes and commentaries on the Diamond Sutra in front of the Dharma Hall and, holding up a torch, declared, "Even though one masters various profound teachings, it is like placing a single hair in vast space. Even if one gains all the essential knowledge in the world, it is like throwing a drop of water into a deep ravine." And with that, he set fire to his books. Then, making his bows, he left. Some biographical material on this Toksan is he's Chinese. Almost all the masters in this, our commentaries, our koan collections are Chinese. His Chinese name is De Shan, and then in Japan he became Toksan. Let's go back to the Chinese. It's not the name De Shan is not as it's not as difficult as some of them are. So I'll, out of respect for the Chinese, I'll go back to the Deshan. His dates are 819 to 914, which is, places him squarely in the Tang Dynasty. He was a disciple of Lung Tan. He had acquired quite a mastery of the Diamond Sutra. He studied it. He studied the rules of the Vinaya. That's the sect of Buddhism that emphasized the monastic rules and regulations. And then he became an authority on the Diamond Sutra. It's one of the most esteemed of the sutras in Zen. It emphasizes emptiness, shunyata. And he earned the nickname Diamond Zhao because of his great authority and mastery of the Diamond Sutra. Here's one of the statements by Dushan, one of his teachings. I'm reading here from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. One day, Zen Master Dushan entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "If you have no concerns of the self, then you have no delusive craving. That which is obtained through delusive craving is not obtained. If you have no affairs in your mind, nor mind in your affairs, then you are unoccupied, yet animated, empty, and wondrous. But if you allow yourself to stray from this upright state, all words will deceive you. Why is this?" This, if you have no affairs in your mind, nor mind in your affairs, another translation is, if you have no concerns in your mind, or mind in your concerns, as if in your business, your daily life, you can move through things no-mindedly, then you are unoccupied, yet animated, empty, and wondrous. Then he goes on, "When bound by the slightest thought, you have entered the hell realms. A single glimpse of your impulsive life and you'll be bound tightly for 10,000 kalpas. The words sacred and ordinary are just empty talk. Superior and inferior appearances are just hallucinations. If you're constantly striving for these things, will you not become exhausted? If you become belabored in this manner, it will be a disaster. The result cannot be good." This is an odd sentence, trying to puzzle over it. A single glimpse of your impulsive life, and you'll be bound tightly for 10,000 kalpas. I guess thoughts of your life, but impulsive life. Here's another one showing Dushan's awareness of the danger of words and becoming attached to words. A monk asked him, "What is Bodhi?" Bodhi means wisdom, or enlightened wisdom. Dushan struck him and said, "Get out, don't defecate here." The monk asked, "What is Buddha?" Dushan said, "An old mendicant in India." Very Zen-like, without worshipping Siddhartha. Shakyamuni, bring him down to earth, an old mendicant in India, an old monk in India. Of course, the account of Dushan's enlightenment is the case in today's koan. Here's another exchange between another master and Dushan. Shui Feng asked Zen Master Dushan, "Can I understand the great teaching of the ancients or not?" Dushan struck him and said, "What?" Shui Feng said, "I don't understand." The next day, Shui Feng again came for instruction. Dushan said, "My teaching has neither words nor phrases. It is actually without a dharma that may be given to others." And at these words, Shui Feng experienced enlightenment. Interesting, the timing of this. Shui Feng, on day one, he doesn't understand Dushan's reply when Deshan struck him and said, "What?" But then the next day when he came back, Deshan gives him some more. "My teaching is neither words nor phrases. It is actually without a dharma that may be given to others." And those were the turning words. Xuefeng had a night to sit and do zazen and dissolve the last obstructive thoughts that had prevented him from understanding Deshan's first response. And then later when Yan Tao heard about this, he said, "Old Deshan's backbone was hard as iron. It couldn't be bent. Even so, within his Dharma gate, there are quite a few students." Deshan said to the monks, "If you speak, you get 30 blows. If you don't speak, you get 30 blows." When Linji, Srinzai, heard this, he said to another monk, "Go there and ask him, if I speak, why do I still get 30 blows?" "When he hits you, grab the staff and give it a shove, then see what he does." And so this monk went and questioned Deshan as he was told. Deshan struck him, sure enough. And the monk grabbed the staff and gave it a shove, at which Deshan just went back to his room. So the monk returned and related these events to Linchi, who said, "Formerly I had doubts about that fellow. Despite what happened, did you see Deshan or not?" The monk hesitated, not knowing what to say. Linchi struck him. So you just wonder whether Linchi was actually expecting Deshan to hit him. He said, "When he hits you, grab the staff," or whether he was just setting this monk up. But then he said, "Formerly I had doubts about that fellow." Maybe appreciating that Deshan couldn't always be expected to do the same thing, that he varied his responses. Although he was known for his stick, Linchi's shout, Deshan's rod, became a saying. And as we see here, to this next one, Deshan said to the monks, "As soon as you ask, you have erred. If you don't ask, you're also wrong." A monk came forward and bowed. Deshan struck him. The monk said, "I just bowed." "Why did you hit me?" Deshan said, "What use would it be to wait until you opened your mouth?" Always remember that in these dialogues that these guys may have been known to each other. Deshan may have known this monk known that there was no point in letting him finish his piece. Or maybe that he was a wise guy and he just wanted to have him go sit down again. This is a famous passage by Deshan showing his irreverent, to say the least, irreverent spirit of Zen. He came, entered the hall, addressed the monks, and said, "I don't hold to views about the ancestors. Here there are no ancestors and no Buddhas. Bodhidharma is an old stinking foreigner. Shakyamuni is a dried piece of excrement. Manjusri and Samantabhadra are dung carriers. What is known as, quote, realizing the mystery is nothing but breaking through to grab an ordinary person's life. Bodhi and Nirvana are a donkey's tethering post. The 12 divisions of scriptural canon are devil's texts, just paper for wiping infected skin boils. The four fruitions and the three virtuous states, original mind and the 10 stages, are just graveyard guarding ghosts. They'll never save you. Here's these strong words, this, you know, way to get the monks to pry them free of their attachments to learning, to concepts, to Buddhist doctrine, so that they might experience the thing itself. D.H. Lawrence said, "All our knowledge is nothing. We are merely crammed waste paper baskets unless we are in touch with that which laughs at all our knowledge." Here's another short one that became a koan in the Shoyoroku. Deshan had become ill, and a monk asked him, "Is there someone who is not ill?" Deshan said, "Yes." The monk asked, "What about the one who is not ill?" And Deshan yelled, "Ah! Ah!" That was a real cough. And then his final words, Deshan's final words to the congregation. He said, "Groping after what is empty and chasing echoes will only fatigue your mind and spirit. Beyond awakening from a dream and then going beyond this awakening, what matters remain?" And then he passed peacefully away. And now, before we get back to the case, just a little bit about the other guy in this koan, Lungtan. He lived around the middle of the 9th century. His family members were cake sellers. A Zen master's home was near the entrance to a temple. Each day, Lungtan would present 10 small cakes as an offering to this master, Dao Wu. Each time, Dao Wu would leave one cake, saying, "This is for the sake of your descendants." One day, Lungtan said, "I take cakes everywhere, so why do you leave one for me? Does it have any special meaning?" Dao Wu said, "You bring the cakes, so what harm is there to return one to you?" At these words, Lungtan grasped the deeper meaning and then became a monk. And then after that, Lungtan remained close to Dao Wu as his attendant. This is a wonderful one here. I still remember it from when Roshi Kaplow would read it early in my training, one day Lungtan asked Zen Master Dao Wu, "Since I've come here, you've never taught me about essential mind." Dao Wu said, "Since you came here, I've never stopped giving you instruction about your essential mind." Lungtan said, "Where have you pointed it out?" Dao Wu said, "When you bring tea to me, I receive it for you. When you bring food to me, I receive it for you. When you do prostrations before me, I bow my head. Where have I not given instruction about your essential mind?" It just points out the difference between Zen teaching and ordinary instruction. It's experiential. At that, Lungtan bowed his head for a long time. Dao Wu said, "Look at it directly. If you try to think about it, you'll miss it." And at that, Lungtan awakened. He then asked Dao Wu, "How does one uphold it?" Dao Wu said, "Live in an unfettered manner in accord with circumstances. Give yourself over to everyday mind, for there is nothing sacred to be realized outside of this." Once Lungtan was approached by the governor of the province. This is after he acquired quite a reputation, of course, as a Zen master. And the governor asked him, "What is the wisdom of true thusness?" Lungtan said, "I have no wisdom of true thusness." The governor said, "I am fortunate to have met you, master." And Lungtan said, "You still speak outside the essential matter." Apparently the governor had come up with his question. Maybe he had turned to his advisors and asked them what he should ask the Zen master. And then got that one response and then showed his courtesy. "I am fortunate to have met you." You still don't get it. And then one more, when Deshan met Lungtan, as he, in this our very case here, with a candle, when he first met him, he said, "Long have I heard of Lungtan." Lungtan means a dragon pond. He said, "Long have I heard of Lungtan. Up to now, I haven't seen the pond, nor has the dragon appeared." So it was, he's insulting him. Or maybe not insulting him, but speaking from the position of emptiness. "I haven't seen the pond, and nor has the dragon appeared." And Lungtan said, "You yourself have arrived at Dragon Pond." But that was before this encounter with the candle, and that was based on Deshan's studies of the Diamond Sutra and the teaching of emptiness. He became such an authority on the Diamond Sutra, and then he heard about this Zen sect in the south of China, and became infuriated. He must have been insecure at some level of the mind, even though he was known for his mastery of the Diamond Sutra. To become infuriated like that means that there was something that made him insecure. And that leads us into the commentary. We'll go back to the case, but this is important. Before Dushan left his native place, his mind burned and his tongue was sharp. He confidently came to the south in order to stamp out the special transmission outside the sutras, the Zen school. When he reached the road to Reishu, he asked an old woman in a roadside tea stand for something to refresh the mind. That's just a play, a pun on what these pastries, I guess, were called mind refreshers or mind pointers. He didn't know what he was getting into. The old woman said, "Venerable monk, what are all those books you are carrying on your back?" Toksan said, "Pah, well, woman, they are my notes and commentaries on the Diamond Sutra." He's probably looking down at her and wondering why he should even be answering her question, this little old woman on the road. What could she possibly know about what the Diamond Sutra is teaching? And then she came back and she said, "Well, I hear it is said, now maybe I'm wrong about this, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I hear it is said in the sutra, past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, future mind cannot be grasped. Now, tell me, which mind, venerable monk, are you going to have refreshed?" And she really hit the bullseye here, because Toksan was left dumbfounded and couldn't answer. It says here in the commentary, "Even so, he did not die the great death at the old woman's words and finally asked her, 'Is there a Zen teacher nearby?'" Maybe they had discussion, maybe stayed hours there with her, and she dangled in front of him that he should maybe take another look at the Zen school rather than just dismissing it and wanting to obliterate it. "But is there a Zen teacher nearby?" The old woman replied, "Lungtan lives 5 miles from here." And it says here in the commentary, arriving at Lungtan's monastery, Dushan was deflated. Very important. His state of mind when he got there, deflated. Having realized that for all of his studies, his years of studies, he couldn't adequately answer this old woman's question. If he hadn't been so ready, if he hadn't already begun to see the limitations of study, her question may not have left him so flummoxed. He may have just found a bunch of words, the way people often do in interviews, politicians and others, where they just circle around the question and just fill the time with words. He may have been able to do that. But he was already in a very sensitive place and knew better, somehow knew better than to try to fake it. There's a story from this book, Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart, Parables of the Spiritual Path from Around the World. Here's how it goes. A learned scholar set forth on a long and difficult sea journey. He desired to impress the crew with the depth of his learning, and he would stop and question the simple sailors as they went about their duties. "Tell me, my good man," he would ask a sailor, "have you studied philosophy?" The sailor would answer, "Oh no, I'm just a simple sailor. I only know how to sail this ship from one shore to the other." The scholar would reply, "You poor man, you have wasted half your life." The next day he would again question the sailor, "Have you studied geometry then, my good man?" The sailor would reply again, "No, sir, I'm sorry, I just rig the sails and steer the ship." The scholar again would shake his head in disappointment and say only, "You poor fellow, dwelling in ignorance, you are wasting much of your life." Day after day, the questions would go on. "Have you studied geometry, anthropology, zoology, psychology?" The sailor could only shake his head in denial. One night, the ship foundered in the storm. The scholar anxiously watched the crashing waves and held tightly to the mast. The sailor approached the scholar and asked him, "Have you, my good man, by any chance studied swimology?" In puzzlement, the scholar could only shake his head. The sailor said, "That really is too bad. You have wasted your whole life, for the ship is sinking." Well, here, Deshan had a second chance. He saw that his ship of academic arrogance was sinking, but he had a life raft that the old woman tossed him in the name of Lungtan up there at Dragon Pond Temple. Which takes us back to the case. So he arrived there. First, it says he was deflated, but first he made that pronouncement. "Here, I've long heard of Dragon Pond, but now I'm here and I don't see the dragon or the pond." And then he must have collected himself enough to talk this Lungtan into discussing the Diamond Sutra, and must have gone into the night. They must have talked at length. It said that Deshan questioned Lungtan far into the night. So he was deflated enough that he realized the limits of his own studies, and he was now seeing Lungtan as the authority on it. And then at some point in the night, Lungtan said, "It's getting late. You should go now." To which Deshan made his bows and lifted the blind to leave, and he saw that it was dark. He had been so engrossed in this discussion that he was surprised to see, Deshan was surprised to see that it was dark out. So Lungtan handed him a candle, and just as Deshan reached for it, Lungtan blew it out. This, Deshan was suddenly enlightened. The great Taoist sage Lao Tzu said, "When darkness is at its darkest, there is the gateway to all spiritual insights." No doubt the discussion, long discussion that Deshan had with Lungtan had exhausted his thinking, Deshan's thinking. He'd come to the end of his massive intellect, come to see its limits, maybe without even knowing it. His mind was spent. It's a very promising state. That's a lot of what we're doing in Zen practice. We're scouring and scouring and scouring the mind through our returning again and again to the practice. We catch ourselves drifting, thinking, analyzing, judging, categorizing, classifying, and we come back over and over again. We keep coming back. Each one of those returns to no thought, that's what every Zen practice is. It's a realm of no thought. Every time we come back, we're working the mind like a solvent. We're learning to see the limits of thought. But this was another way, this long discussion. His mind was ripe. After Deshan awakened, he made bows. Bows usually in these texts means prostrations. Longtan asked, "What have you realized?" He must have been intrigued by the new Deshan. And Deshan replied, "I'll never again doubt the words of the old monk who is renowned throughout the world." Lungtan was known as well-known Lungtan. In fact, that's in one koan commentary, that's the name of the koan, well-known Lungtan. The next day, Lungtan entered the hall and declared to the assembly, "Among you there is a fellow whose teeth are like swords and whose mouth is like a bowl of blood. Strike him with a stick and he won't turn his head. One day he will climb to the highest of all peaks and establish our way there." And then Deshan, Lungtang was just talking about, Deshan then placed his notes, all his piles and piles of notes and commentaries and the sutras themselves, in front of the Dharma hall, and held up a torch and said, "Even though one masters various profound teachings, it is like placing a single hair in vast space. Even if one gains all the essential knowledge in the world, it is like throwing a drop of water into a deep ravine." And with that, he set fire to the books. I read somewhere that when St. Thomas Aquinas was in his last days and his later last stage of his life, his secretary was urging him to continue writing. And he said to him, "Reginald, I can do no more. Such things have been revealed to me that all the writings I have produced seem to me like a straw." George Santayana said, "The great challenge of education is to get experience out of ideas." Boy, had Deshan ever made that leap from concepts, notions, ideas about the truth to the direct experience. in the commentary, Amumon says, it has to be said that his former words and his latter words were inconsistent. Lungtan is like a mother who, because she loves her child too much, does not realize how meddlesome she herself is. This is Mumon's facetiousness. Finding a bit of live coal in Deshan, he immediately poured muddy water over him, annihilating everything at once. Looking at the matter calmly, you can say it was all just a farce. This also is Mumon's style of not letting things get too precious and just then cleaning up all of this. Lungtan poured muddy water over him. And then Mumon's verse, seeing the face is better than hearing the name. Hearing the name is better than seeing the face. He may have saved his nose, but alas, he lost his eyes. Seeing the face is better than hearing. This is another play on Lungtan's nickname, well-known Lungtan. Seeing the face is better than hearing the name. Well, the direct experience is better than reading about the truth, hearing about it, studying it. There's a saying in Zen, a picture of a rice cake does not satisfy hunger. It's a good one. When I first tried reading The Three Pillars of Zen, I was disappointed in it. I was so used to the pleasure, the intellectual pleasure of reading about philosophy. I'd minored in philosophy and about Zen. I had read a couple books on Zen. I was titillated by all of the sophisticated paradoxes and everything. And then to encounter this book that was so practical, crossing your legs, and I read a few pages and tossed it aside, and it took some suffering before I picked it up and saw it in a whole new way. But then this first, seeing the face is better than hearing the name, okay, fair enough. But then hearing the name is better than seeing the face? How so? Hearing the name, that is, hearing about it, reading about it, is better than experiencing it? That's one of the points of the koan the student has to address. And then these last two, he may have saved his nose, but alas, he lost his eyes. Who's the he? And what does Mumon mean? Our time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows. Beings without number, I vow to liberate endless blind matter
and I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind nations. I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot Dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain.